Hello, everybody, and welcome to Dollars. I'm joined, not as always, but with Darren Staithe-Smith. How's it going, Dazza?
Sublime, Alan. Happy to be here. happy to fill Chris's car seat for the day. I know he's busy. I guess, do we get to like break the world news? Like the world, are we the exclusive newsbreaker of his big news?
Yeah.
I guess Chris, we have to be.
Yeah, Chris is starting to figure out what happens when people tell like him or I stuff. It just ends up on the pod on a Wednesday. But yeah, he's officially a double dad, as you like to coin it. What comes along with the double dad, the tag?
Well, let me start with saying marginally less time than he had before. The free time gets cut in half. Saggier balls. So other than that, no change.
Cool. Sounds good. Yeah, now he's got a second beautiful, healthy, happy baby. So, yeah. Bub and mum doing great. So well done there, Ella. And to look after him, Chris. I'm sure he's listening.
Yeah, that's it, man. I hope everyone stays healthy and little baby Theo's enjoying having a baby or brother. You know, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. That's an exciting first meet. So hopefully that's all happened.
How's your week been?
Yeah, good. Exciting? I mean, it was cool to get Street League underway. I think we'll talk about it later, but like it was fun just to get that rolling for the year, for the season. So other than that, I've just been working like a dog. So it was nice to get out and out in the sun on Sunday afternoon and play some frisbee.
Yeah, for sure. The weather was beautiful. It was all meant to be. So that was really nice. Big news on my front is the Throller shirts arrived today. So wave two Throller shirts came, and the tie-dye ones turned out really nice. I'm really happy with it. So I'm very excited to start handing them out. I'll be at Bald Hill on Saturday, I believe, anyway. I've got a pretty big night the night before, so we'll see, but that's the plan. And I'll try to hand out some shirts and stuff, so that'll be cool. I'm keen.
Yeah, I really liked how you guys brought out like normal shirts first, and then we're like, psych, we got cooler ones after, and people had to buy two then.
So yeah,
that's elite marketing.
Yeah, exactly. It worked out pretty good. Wasn't sure what to do, but then yeah, once we saw that Matt Damon thing, but fuck, who was it? I don't know. One of the celebrities was doing a frisbee joke thing.
It's Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt. Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah,
I think they did it really cool. And I cannot believe there's so many people got them. I cannot believe how many people got them. So,
Well,
should be good.
Tie-dye never goes out of style, you know?
Apparently.
Well, it does definitely go out of style, but I think it's back. It's gone full circle. It's back in again. So
it's back. Well, it will be. It better be. I'm going to be rocking them on the weekend. So it should be pretty good. One place.
I've often thought like disc golf shirts, like if you look at it from the outside, most of them are inherently quite ugly, but like we just get around it and like it. So yeah, carry on.
Very, very good potential that this is. I saw one of the 10 Bohan ones in the flesh on the weekend. Ash Weedner was rocking it and they were very good. I was very impressed with that. So they're good.
That might be Heiser's best design ever.
Yeah, it was super cool. Some good little details too, like a bit of a snakeskin sort of pattern kind of creeping in and out. It was sick. I was a big fan of that. So well,
yeah, I mean, Tim, like it's gonna take a long time for him to like shed the 10, you know, like he might never shed it. Nice. Unless he gets an 11, then he'd maybe get rid of the 10. That might be the only way to get rid of the 10.
Well, he's got a chance. He could do it again at this year's eruption. He is signed up. One thing I don't think he signed up for, though, is Nationals. And that's because nobody signed up. Is that a bit rude, bit rude to say? I've had a look. There's 67 players signed up for Nationals this year out of a potential 300 is what
they
have.
That's not ideal. I don't say that's not ideal. But it is pretty – it's early in a sense. I know it's only really 4 months – 3 months away, 4 months away. But
yeah.
It is early. I mean, people would be just – they only really just opened registration like in the last few weeks, didn't they?
Yeah.
For it? Yeah. So it's it'll still fill up, but it's Perth, man. Perth is far.
It's tough.
Hard to get to, expensive to get to.
Yeah, that's why I don't see my name on there and I don't see your name on there, and I'm sure that's the same reason.
I really want to go, but it's just impossible, I think, this year for me. So I've never even set foot on Mundaring, and I think it'd be cool to see it and cool to probably, like, if you play, I think if you play in the pros or the MA1 division, the high amateur divisions, you're probably going to get to play like the WIF diff courses that they use, or at least portions of it. So they look pretty awesome. I'd love to be able to throw them at some point, but I just don't know if November this year is going to be it.
No, I don't think so either. But yeah, hopefully a few more sign up. Only 8 in the MPO at the moment, so long way to go, but I'm sure it'll definitely trickle up to something meaty.
Yeah, I mean, even it's 8 with an asterisk too. I reckon Chris Finn is in there. Like, a few more high-rated players register, he'll probably just drop into MP40, I imagine.
Yeah, probably.
Try and win that instead.
Probably.
But yeah, like, there's a few going out from out east, but even then, it looks like it's nearly, like one quarter WA guys. Jack Maffey's coming out again from New Zealand, which is cool.
Yeah, that was cool. I like that. That's a good dude.
But it's a small field for sure at the moment. I saw, though, MA40 is pretty loaded, like 14 players, which is cool.
Yeah, wow. All right.
A few guys.
That's like a third of the field.
A few guys. Matt Green making his MA40 debut, I reckon, wouldn't he be?
Nah, he's been fucking around with MA40 this year, so I think he might have been eligible, but he's played a few events in it. So, and then coincidentally, Schlobom has left it.
He's back in it for this one.
No correlation.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
They probably don't even drive to the course together or anything.
Yeah, probably.
Take your own car.
I saw the a post from the New South Wales Open, which is coming up in, next month or the month after, something like that. I hadn't had a real good look at it. It's out in Newcastle. I don't really know much about that course, and I haven't actually heard anything about it. And I feel like if it was any good, we probably would have heard, people sparring it out. But one thing that stood out to me is the sheer transparency that they have on their fees, which is super, super, unusual for a tournament. But they've come out and they've said that the PDJ per player fee is coming out to about $1. Their green fees, because it must be on a golf course, so meaning the fees required to secure the course and permit to play, comes out to $47 per player, the approximate cost for 3 days. The ADG...
But go on.
The ADG fees. So what the ADG charges to be part of the tour and have insurance and stuff like that comes out to $24 per player. And bathroom fees, meaning the pro-rated per player cost of toilet rental, comes to $2. So if you add that up pretty quick, 24, what's that, 60, 75 odd dollars, bang, just straight up there in fees. That doesn't include trophies, prizes, any of that sort of stuff. And I don't know what the exact amount was. I probably should look that up for entry fee. But, normally these big tournaments are coming in around 120-ish for the AMs and, 160-ish for the pros, something like that.
Yeah, correct.
And 75 bucks just gets wiped right away there. So, yeah, I think there's some added cash in here to pump up the pro purse, but it was pretty cool to see this transparency. And I wonder if, because I just don't think a lot of people realize how much shit just goes straight out of your pocket as soon as you get that money. So maybe there'll be a bit more of this going forward.
I'm all for it. I think it's naive to think you should be getting, as an Australian market, we don't have America's got sort of sponsored events by disc golf companies and stuff, and they players packs will basically be donated essentially to those events, as long as you call it the Dynamic Disc Amateur State blah blah whatever, they'll pretty much donate your players packs, and that brings the cost of events down so much. And in Australia, we just don't have that. There's no backing, there's no big business behind events. So it's basically like budgeted and accounted for by the TD every time. No one out there, I don't think any TDs are making money off events. I think it's just, if anything, like I've run events to losses before too, where I accidentally gave away more than I even took in, which is awesome. but yeah, like people need to know where, like, it's good to show people where the money goes, and people might not be aware that like event TDs have to pay ADG just to run events for insurance. Like that, it's not, we're not just giving the ADG money for fun. They're the insuring body for public liability and stuff like that. So I mean, I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole of, are those fees acceptable or fair, or they set the fees. If you want to run events through them, you pay their fees, basically, is what happens. So, but yeah, I'm all for it. Like, show it. You should be upfront with your budgets, and people then might be more in tune to sign up. If they know, well, that's where the money went. So let's do it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was cool to see, and just odd. Like, that's what really stood out to me. It's the first tournament I'd ever seen that didn't just have, you know, maybe a flat rate I've potentially seen before, but definitely nothing broken down like this. So, yeah, cool to see. And I thought it was worth noting here.
Yeah, I like it. I might do it. I'll do it at the next event I do. Yeah, and just be like, sausages.
$8.
Spray paint. Soft ice is a big one, man. You don't think about
ice
it.
Ice is such a big one. Yeah.
You buy 10 bags of ice over the weekend. That's like $60, man.
Yeah.
The ice, it comes from somewhere. You gotta, yeah. Anyway.
No, for sure. I was listening to one of the three episodes of the Tee Off that got dropped on the weekend, and they had Dave Perry on at one stage, and one of the things that really stood out, he's a very dynamic guy, so there's a lot of things that stood out, but one of the things that stood out most to me was his practice work. So he said that he doesn't really get out to the course much. He goes, maybe, you know, just probably just once a week, which, like, that's already got me covered. He goes, but he gets to the field 2 to 3 times every week and puts in some practice putting most days. I knew he did plenty. I just didn't realize, like, that's a lot. 2 to 3 times a week at the field, once at least at the course, and putting most days. Like, is this any surprise that he's so much better than us?
I mean, what is it? It takes 10,000 hours to, you know, be astute in a craft, and you have to put those hours in however you can. You can do it playing rounds of disc golf, but you'll get there a lot slower than if you do training like he's doing. So I'm here for it. I've had the exact conversation with him that they had, which is hilarious, where I was like, you've been playing much? He's like, no, not playing much, but, you know, field work 4 days a week and putting every day. I'm like, that's substantially more play than I ever get to do. So cool. No wonder you're good at this.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he's 1,010 rated player. That's what, maybe what you need to be doing. You can have natural talent, but you need to just put the reps in if you want to be consistent and maintain, you know? So
yeah,
I liken it to like a scratch, you can't, you know, a scratch golfer in ball golf. Like, you can't fake your way to it. You can be like quite good at golf and like get down to like your 3 to 5 handicap, but like to hold scratch, you need to be like at the range a couple days a week, just hitting balls straight. You need to be putting on the putting green every other day, and you need to play like 2 rounds a week, and that's how you get to scratch. And that is unattainable for the time alone is unattainable for lots of people, and that's why it's hard to do, you know?
Hard to do that and have a full-time job and maybe family.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, if I started playing that much, I would probably lose my job or my family. But at least I'd be good at disc golf, so that's probably the most important.
Exactly. since you mentioned like scratch golfers and handicaps and stuff, so you're quite a handy golfer. And a handy disc golfer. What do you think is the equivalent rating for a scratch golfer? Is it 1,000, or is that not even there yet? Is 1,000 rated golfer disc golfer not even a scratch golfer?
I think that was the desired design of it.
Yeah.
And if you do the math, that's probably about right, actually. So if you do the math, the best golfers in the world, if you look at like Scottie Scheffler kind of level, he's probably playing off like +7 or +8 at his local course, which means he has to shoot 7 or 8 under par just to be scratch. If that makes sense, just to break even in like a points based system. So that, you know, if you went shots in disc golf, that's what would that be? 35 to 40 points, and that's like the rating of the best players in the world in disc golf. 10-40. So it checks out. I think that was the design, was 1,000 rated as scratch. I think in Australia, like 975 is probably more like a scratch. but even then, it's, you can't compare them. They're two different sports, you know? Yeah.
Nah, fair enough.
Golf, like in my mind, golf is always like a hard golf course is hard to everyone. And then, but like disc golf courses, some of them can be so easy. Like, you know, look at like Stony Creek. It's not like that course. Sure, you can go 10 under on it, but like the course is quite simple when you think about it, if you just put it all together.
Yeah, so, anyone could go 10 down there.
Yeah, you just have a good day, like, and you're shooting birdies nonstop. So,
nah, very, very true. Well, a much harder course than that is the Crater Lakes course. So we'll have a little look at the Rumble and the Crater that just went ahead, mostly because we had a few Victorians head over, but also because they had a couple course tweaks that I'm interested in. So in the MPO, these aren't the results. Let me get the results out. Paddy Robinson ended up taking it out over Nath Parrish and Bryce Winchester. So Paddy was a late arrival or late decision, and he didn't come out firing in round one, but did enough in round two when no one else seemed to fire a shot. So no surprise, he was the biggest dog there by far, and gets it done. But yeah, not particularly stellar play for him anyway. So it would have been great for me, but not so good for Paddy. But ends up getting it done. Kalen popped over and crushed it in the MA1. He gets it done by 3 strokes over Michael Gleese, who is very, very handy. And then we've seen Cooper Thompson back in Australia. So he's that American bloke that came down, well, I don't know, 6-8 months ago now, and was playing everything. And yeah, he's back. So I'm sure we'll be seeing him flat out at all the social days and stuff like that. So he got rolled pretty heavily by Justin Clark. But Glenn Maisie was there in first place with him and lost in a playoff. Apparently, JC hit a pretty spectacular putt on the Eruption hole 2 layout. So bad luck there, Glenn. But it's good to see Glenn back into some nice form. A couple of 940 plus rated rounds. That's hot there for Glenn.
Absolutely, yeah. And not like those two guys both beat the whole pro field except for Paddy as well.
They were playing different layouts. What? So they're still very good though. So there was two pars that were different, so you'd have to add sort of 4 strokes onto it, and then there was 2 holes that were easier.
Please disregard my earlier comment.
But still, like, even if the two brings it down to a -2, that's right in there with a couple of those MPO boys, and then just sort of depends how different those holes were, but still very, like, sure, real good rounds. And then in Carey Edwards and Richard Lewis Schell with another pretty good battle, but Carey gets it done by 5 strokes, and not that far behind was Terry Bohan. So Tez's body must be on the mend, because I know he'd blown it all up.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, Terry's back. That's awesome.
Too much going on there. Oh, sorry, I forgot. Of course, he's going to kill me. Ross Davies getting it done by 2 strokes over Lachlan Howell Graham. So a Vic 1-2 podium, the Quinella there, which is good to see. MA4, Ross hit me up beforehand and just he let me know that he was pretty confident he was going to be coming up with the hardware on that one. And, gets it done. And marketing.
Yeah,
and,
he probably could just move out of MA4.
You think, right?
If you want, yeah.
I think you only win one MA4 tournament in your life.
You have to move after that.
Marky and Charlotte both take out their MJ and FJ 15 in respective. So good weekend for the Davieses, coming home with three trophies.
Yeah, two, right? That's great. The trifecta.
The trifecta indeed. So yeah,
One thing of note. Sorry, we got to shout out Alex Costales, who actually shot the hot round of the hot score of the weekend. He was playing MP40 by himself, but he shot 10 under overall, which was one shot better than Paddy.
Wow, yeah, so really good.
That's pretty cool.
Damn, and
he would have been on the same. I think he was on the same course as those guys. So.
Nah, definitely. Yeah, that's sick. I missed that. Good spot. Well done, Costales. Yeah, 9.95 rated final round. Damn, okay.
Yeah, he shot hot round of the weekend, tied with Bryce Winchester's first round. So sick. I think the conditions were a little tougher on the second day, so that would be the higher rated round, I think, for the weekend.
That would make sense, because everyone else seemed to struggle on day two.
Yeah, it was the same score. It was 9.77 in the first day, and it was 9.95 the second day, so yeah, much harder. Right. Three shots harder.
Must have been wind. The wind can play some pretty serious havoc down in the crater.
Absolutely.
So I know one of the changes that they made was the AM field played normal, like the eruption layout, hole 18. They played it over from the left. So I don't know exactly the pin placement, but it kind of looked like it was somewhere near, you know, if you were to throw to the left, it's the last safe area before you have to go to the island. It's somewhere over in that space. So it was very interesting to see that they had done that. And I should definitely reach out to Ryan and find out how that played, because that could be a pretty good solution to the massive backups that we end up having by the end of the tournament there. If the AMs get moved over to that space, that could do a lot for the tournament. So that was really cool to see.
Yeah, I'm here for it. I mean, I can picture sort of where that tee would be, and you could still, like, they might, for eruption, they could probably still, because you're still hanging it out over the water for part of the shot if you're right-handed.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And they could probably even, like, flag the middle section as, like, the dry ground as hazard or something, like, because you still have to go over it or take a penalty, but at least it's not just, like, empty the bag death shots like you're faced with at the moment from that other tee. So, which I like for the pros, absolutely, they have to send it to the gulag. But for MA3 players and MA4 players, it's a little bit different. That's a tough shot. I'm all for it. Like, modified tees to make it work for everyone is great.
Definitely. The other couple of things that I noticed that were pretty hectic. I had them in my spotlights, but my spotlights are full today, so I'll get them out now. But Kalen got himself an eagle on the par 5. I think it's normally maybe hole 8 or 9. 8. No, 7. Sorry, I'm cooked. On the eruption layout. So when you start coming back towards that car park area. And it's got a bit of an elevated basket or something like that. That's far. Like, I asked him about it to find out whether he had a throw in, but he said he just threw two hyzer flips and got into C2 and canned the putt. Like, that's crazy, right? Like, that's really good.
It's far, but it's not a hard two shots in a row to string together, I don't think. It's far though. I've had eagle looks there, so really? I haven't actually ever got one, but if I'm thinking of the same hole, this is the one with the basket that's like under the willow.
Yeah,
the
willow's
gone. That whole tree is almost gone now from the big storm.
Yeah.
So the basket's just sort of sitting up. I think they even moved the basket back a bit.
They did. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But so that, with that in mind, that is pretty awesome. If the basket's higher and further, and he's still getting to C2, that's pretty cool. Because C2 would essentially be like where the old basket was practically. So. Yeah, it's awesome. Like, it's there. That's two rips for sure. To get to that spot, I wonder if they played from the back tee, because there's a closer tee there too. Maybe they were playing off the shorter tee or something.
I don't think so. From when I looked at the course map, it looked like it was that one.
Back tee that's tucked in with the retaining wall and stuff.
Yeah, which is hard. Like, it's hard to get a crush first drive. Like, because it's just so low there.
It's a funny line. It's good for lefties, that tee shot, but not so much for righties. That's why I'm so good at it.
So that was big. I thought that was really good. But the other thing that I thought was pretty crazy is young Marky Davies on hole two of their layout, which was hole two of the eruption layout. So the one where you got to sort of shoot down, you got the crap on the right, and then you got to get up through that gap onto that little mound. He took a four in round two. That's incredible. Like, a par on that is so good, and he's like 12 or something.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. That's cool. That was really wild.
I messaged his old man. I was like, holy shit, how's Marky getting a four on that? And apparently he never told him. So he'd asked him about it, and then he's like, oh, yeah, and then just, this is what I did. And the old man was like, what the fuck?
That one plays as like a par 4.8, basically. Like, if you get a four, it feels like a birdie.
Yeah, I looked up the stats from the eruption, and MA1 was playing at like par five, like as a five. It was playing five strokes. Yeah, one per over par. And for the MPO, it was playing at 4.8. Like, the hole's so hard. I think I took a seven on it at least one of the days. And it probably was, and I'm not even alone. Like, I was super impressed. Those two things stood out to me like dog's balls.
Yeah, definitely. He birdied the hole before that too in the first day, which is kind of wild.
I think, that playing as a five?
No, it was a par four.
That's playing as a four, and he threed that.
Yeah. What? Yeah. He's doing some wild stuff.
Damn. All right.
As long as we're thinking of the right holes.
I'm trash.
Would have started on the lake and then gone to the shot over like the normal 18, and then that checks out.
No, crazy. I think their hole one was that hole, was the hole two. So hole 22 was what we normally play as hole one.
Yeah, okay. I'm all turning around. Anyway, he looks like he's doing cool stuff. 500 foot par four par. Sweet.
Yeah.
I like it.
We've got the World Games coming up very, very shortly. I took a screenshot either today or yesterday. I can't remember. So it's either 3 days or 2 days to go. And we've got Cassie and what's his name?
Blake.
Over there in Chengdu, ready to roll. So they put out a post about what the deal is, because I didn't really know exactly what was going on, but from the Australian disc golf team, it says that it will feature 16 national teams made up of one female and one male player competing in mixed doubles match play format. Play will take place at a specifically constructed 18-hole course at the something, something, something. Teams will progress through the pools and the knockout stages and stuff like that. But here's the part that I just absolutely hate. All matches will use modified alternate shot doubles match play. So for each match, doubles teams will nominate who will go, but it's old shot. So Cassie has to take 9 of the tee shots and Blake has to take 9. And they just they decide beforehand which 9 that will be. And then you just sort of go from there. Old sucks, man.
Yeah, that's the same format that the WIFTIF World teams use as well. It's not, old shot is not great, but it's probably the most pure form of playing. Like, it's if you're playing a match, best shot doubles is kind of not, like, it has to be single shots. Yeah, throughout. The other thing I saw, which I really don't like, is you have maximum 2 drives in a row each, which is that silly to me. Mm. Like, you should be able to go, you should be able to rack up 9 straight from one person if you want to, like, and then the other person has to play the whole back 9 starting tee shots. Like, that should be, if you want to do it that way, you should be able to.
Yeah, if that's a strategy, go for it.
Like, if there's 3 massive holes in a row, like, that you want Blake throwing first drive on and you only get to use two of them. Like, that's it seems so silly.
Yeah.
But I think they'll be on the, like, they'll be playing the course. They'll be practicing in the next couple of days and they'll figure it out. And it won't even, like, it starting holes, they'll have ones they like and ones they don't, and they'll just work it out. So it's not too bad. But yeah, old shot is, it is what it is.
Mm.
I didn't know that they were going to be playing exclusively teams either. I thought it was like they were each representing, like they were going to, the doubles was an aspect of it, but there was also like female events and male events, and then it was all like cumulative. But yeah, it's like straight up just old shot dubs the whole way through. So
yeah, well, yeah, I didn't really know at all what was going on, so it was good to get this information out there. And then Chris sent us today that there's like an app you can download, and it, you can watch every event live for free.
Yeah, cool. So, that's awesome.
Yeah, so if you just go and search for World Teams Live, you'll find it on your app stores, and you can just download it, and bang, we should be able to watch them play. So that's fucking sick. I'm real keen for that. Like, this is actually like a pretty big deal. This is like a lot bigger of an event than the World Teams was.
It is very much, yes. This is like one level sort of like, it's only one or two steps away from the Olympics as far as like events go. And it's like, you got events have to get through the World Games and then they get put up for Olympic nomination basically as well. So if sports do well at this, then they get sort of like put in the route, like in the draws and the ballot system to get picked for Olympic sports. So it's yeah, it's a cool stepping stone. It's cool that disc golf's in it. So
yeah, that's sick. So hopefully it goes well, not just for us, but for yeah, for every country, so that we can get in there.
And like, I've seen a few, like I think Kristen Latt is there. Like, I think she just got there.
Oh, sick. Okay.
And like Anniken Sten is there for Norway, and Gannon Burr is going for US. Like, no, there's some shit. There's some dogs rolling in for this. Like Team Canada's Thomas Gilbert and Sophia Donaghy. So wow. Like, they're not mucking around either. So there's going to be some stiff competition at this, I think, as well. Like, it's teams, the countries are taking it a little bit more seriously maybe than the WFDF. So, which is, yeah, I'm all for it.
That's awesome. I love it. Well, something that's a little bit less important than that on the world scale was the Stony social date that we had on the weekend.
just slightly smaller. Just
a couple steps. If that's a couple below the Olympics, this is maybe a couple more below that.
One or two tiers.
But we had a big turnout. So it was really good, and it was such a beautiful day. And plenty of low scores going around Stony Creek, which is good. In Div C, it was taken out with a -4 hot score. Daniel Santamaria takes that out over Alex Ritchie and Matt Mutter, who were tied in second place there. In Div B, Carlton Clerk is just continuing with his strong form. And a -7 gets it done over -6 Mark Green and -4 Ash Whedon and Simon Farrar. So Carlton's got to be out of Div B very shortly, I'm sure.
Surely.
And then in Div A, every single person besides Tim Stevenson under par, with Tim finishing on dead even. 20 others in it, though, all under par, and a lot of them really, really under par, but no one could catch Sam Barnett. Clean scorecard, -13, if you don't mind.
Yeah, that's scintillating stuff from Sam. I like it.
That's low. That's a good score. I mean, I know it's Stony, yeah, but that's 13 birdies. That's really good.
13 birdies, yeah. Yeah, awesome.
Right behind him was our very own C. Reynolds, his last round as a single dad. So he gets a -12 with a bogey on hole 10.
Also 13 birdies. Also 13 if that's the case.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then a host of names in third place with -10. As you said, anyone can get it, and that's why I did. Sebastian Gutierrez as well, Ryan Dear, Penn Lu, and Narada Guzman with a big fat 1 on his scorecard.
Yeah, that's so cool. I was gonna. Did he definitely clean up the ace pot, or were you being sarcastic? I wasn't sure.
Nah, he's in it. Like for some reason, people kept asking that. Like no one believes that Narada would go in an ace pot, but he was definitely in it. So
I thought for a second you were just like giving him a slow burn on the group chat on the public group chat. Like, oh yeah, you would have got this much. But he's mopped it up then. Yeah, that's sick. He won, what was it, 485 or something?
Yep. Yeah, that's big.
Wow-wee.
There's a lot of people in the ace pot at the moment, so it's it fattens up pretty quick. We're adding about $40 each social day, so next week it's going to be about $40, and then once a jackbox, 80, 120, like it starts going pretty quick.
Yeah.
And there's not that much long before they lock it out, and it's only like $13 to enter at the moment, so I'm sure, and they take Melbourne Club vouchers. So I'm sure lots of people have Melbourne Club vouchers. Just get on the ace pot. Lots and lots of people in there, also under par. I'll have a quick look at our the Throwler's guarantees between Chris and I, because they were in this one. Chris gave me 7 points that Mark Hardy, that Mark Hardy would beat me. I asked for a matchup between myself and Hardy, and he gave Mark a 7. Mm. Gave him pretty much no chance. And I know Hardy, and I know me, and I said 7 sounds unreasonable. So I took the 7. And Hardy put in a -9 score in the morning, and I was pretty happy about that. Went straight up to Chris to let him know that he made a mistake. I started on 13 or something like that with the big forehand with the Mando in the middle.
Yeah.
And missed the Mando. So started with a bogey, and I'm like, you beauty, I need 11 birdies from here on out to beat Hardy. So I'm home.
How many did you get?
I got 11 fucking birdies. I didn't miss. I was so good. I hit so many putts. I hit like 3 from C2 and then just canned all the rest. Just bang. Couldn't miss putts until my last 2 holes, and I missed 2 putts from inside C1. So I could have been right there on 12, but I fucked myself over. Just played too good. Just cash and putts like a motherfucker. So -10 is more than -9, so I get 0. Chris had also asked about what Ville's line would be, and I gave him a -9.5 line. And Chris thought that was unders, and he said he'll take the 10 or more. And Vil with 2 bogeys at Stony Creek ended up with a -9. So
good line. That's a good line.
It worked out pretty well. So Chris, no points as well. So we've been on such a hot streak, and it's all come to a crashing end where none of us got any points here. So not too bad. I'll retain the lead, 21-19. Thank you very much.
Take it and run. I'll give you a few really janky ones today where Chris, like, I'll pretend I'm Chris and I'll agree to some lofty ones just so you can get in front too.
Nice. I'll talk about a couple of the tipping matchups just because I don't have them in front of me, but there was a couple of interesting ones. As I mentioned, Carlton Clerk has been pretty hot lately. With 2 holes to go, he was -5 and he was up against Ash Weidner, and I was chatting with him. And Ash was like, yeah, I could mess around with that -5. And then I said, well, he's got 7 and 8 left, and they're unlikely birdies. They're both pretty tough. And Carlton got them both and finished with a -7. So Ash had his work cut out for him, but he was 6 down through 7 holes. We started on 12, and he birdied 12, 13, 14, 15, parred 16, and then went 17, 18. So he was just on fire, couldn't be stopped, and then threw it out of bounds on hole 1. got it back, and then a couple out of bounds later, and then 1,000 pars, and he ended up with a -4. So couldn't be done there, but it was a bit more in it than that. He was on fire. And then one of the other spicy ones, or the Ville line, we put that up as an option, and lots of people went both ways on that. So that was a good one. I took the 10. I thought he's going to get it, but wasn't to be. And I had a new sneaky little one that I put in there. So it was Ryan Deere, and I wanted to put him up against a couple, not chumps, but not studs. and see how, you know, they their combined negative score would pair up against Diros. So I put him up against Narada and Tim Stevenson, and Tim Stevenson came out with an even. So it became a head-to-head battle in Narada, but Narada came out firing and Diros was slow. Get Narada gets the ace and he's way ahead, but throws it out of bounds on his final hole to get down to, because he was at neg 11, to get down to neg 10, and then Diros birdied like his last three to tie it. And no one had the draw, so that fucked everyone.
Perfect.
So, yeah, they were good. We already talked about myself and Hardy. That was a matchup. I can't remember too much else about what was there without looking into it. But, yeah, a couple good ones there. So I'll have something out for the Bald Hill Social Day tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, awesome. I have a detective. I have some detective questions from this round.
Yeah, yeah.
Second, I see that Taron Anderson has taken an eagle on hole four.
Yeah.
I saw him after the round. He did not mention that. I feel like that would be news he would share.
Yeah, no, I asked him about it, and they were, like, real casual. Like, so was, who was it? Aiden was like, yeah, just, I was like, what hold your eagle? He's like, oh, the one you, and Aiden's like, oh, the one you can eagle. I was like, what fucking one can you eagle?
You can eagle hole four, but I feel like it's, like, news, you know?
Yeah, no.
Mike's doing well at sport, doesn't
Yeah, I
he?
Think he threw an air shot to, like, C2 and hit a C2 putt.
Yeah.
Like, fucking real good.
That's great.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, they were brushing it off. Like, that's chill. And I'm like, nah, that doesn't happen. Look at the whole, no one else eagled.
Nah. It doesn't happen often. It's happened a few times. But, yeah. Like, he's in esteemed company. Like, we're talking, like, Ryan Hart and, you know, studs like Darren Stay Smith have eagled it, you know?
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't happen every day, you know?
Yeah. Aiden played it off casual as fuck. There's no way Aiden's eagled that hole. I'm not having it.
I don't think so.
Good eye there. That was good. I did forget about that.
That's all right. And one other shout out, obviously, goes to young Archer Hardy playing his first ever round.
Yeah, that was
pretty
cool. Oh, out with the old man.
And I think Tyler Murphy, if I have it right, was Josh Smith's stepson playing his first ever round as well. So pretty cool.
Very, very cool.
Good to see the kids out there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely.
Children are the future.
They are the future. And this back straight on to our first round of Street League, as you mentioned before. How did that all go down?
Yeah, I mean, Street League is the best competition of the winter, for sure, by a mile. So there's no doubt that Melbourne Disc Golf Club will notice a slight registration change between, like, 8 a.m. rounds being full to 10:30 a.m. rounds being full for the whole winter. And I hope they work out why. Because them Street League players want to get their reps in, you know what I'm saying? So
100%.
Yeah, I mean, we had two teams. What was it? Two teams took the W. So it was Narada's team, who were called Lionel Putts, and Kalen's team, who were called Van Kalen. They took wins against the other two teams. So we've already got some front runners for the season. And I'm not going to go through each match, but I just want to, I hope he's listening. I'm sure he is, but thanks for the match, Ryan Deere. I'll see you next time.
You got two up on him very quickly.
Yeah, I got two up on him in about three holes, and then I was three up on him, and then I was four up on him.
Oh, okay.
And then all of a sudden he like started like getting a lot better, and I was like, oh shit, here it comes. But he I just kept birdieing, man. He can get all the birdies he wants, but once I'm four up, like, I'm just going to get the birdies too, and then you can't do anything about it. So, yeah, got him. Take that.
Big.
Perhaps the biggest upset of the weekend. Perhaps maybe outshadowed only by Alex Ritchie and Jason Wiedner taking down Ash Wiedner.
Yeah,
there's no way he's happy about that in four up fashion as well.
No, I know. Yeah, they smoked him. That was pretty good.
Ash had Paul Baker on his team, but look, you can't be losing the little brother. You know, I would die before I let that happen to me.
Peter Chu and Max Tats four up over Tim Ware and Matt Finnegan is pretty good too.
Yeah, a bit surprised by that one. The rest of the matches kind of went the way I thought they would on the weekend. I'm maybe surprised that Brett got you, but, you know, Brett's on my team, so never in doubt. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Brett and I are pretty close, and I used up all my putting in round one. So Brett stayed pretty good, and I dropped off, so he got it done. So that was a bit disappointing. But yeah, Aiden smacked Narada. Lachlan McKenzie, who was a fill-in for us with Taron Anderson, put the hurt on Josh Smith and Matt Mutter. And Carlton Clerk and Cole Herbison smashed Matty Farina and Peter Barry. So that was three up for Lionel Putts. And yeah, the top end was just too good for Van Kalen. So Ville over Penn. Honeyman over Sam Barnett, which is that stiff. You roll up and get a 13, you take down the social day, and you get rolled in the street. By Honey. It's tough.
Well, Honey's a monster, so.
He is. He was looking very good in his stroller shirt, too. And then Martin Go over Picanti. So both captains that were there on the day got rolled by six. Tough. That's tough.
Fair. Yeah, that's tough. That's a couple rough innings.
So the CTB was taken out by Deiros on Old Stony 17. That's a very good hole. And he
it's my favorite hole on that course.
Yeah.
My favorite hole on the course, like, and it's hard too. Like, it's probably the hardest shot on that course. Not far, but most degree of difficulty, I think, maybe going around. So it was kind of funny actually, because I threw it inside the CTB, and then we thought my shot might have been out of bounds, and then it was not out of bounds, but then Ryan's was closer, and he's like,
huh. Yeah, okay.
I guess you have it.
That's fine. And the players of the week went to Aiden for smacking Narada by six. Jace Wiedner, do you know the story on that? What was going on with JC Boy? They missed him pretty good if he took out Big Brother.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I didn't hear about it, but I should have done some digging. Mm. I didn't know I was going to be on the podcast.
Yeah,
but,
that's all right. Yeah, I was going to reach out to the winning captain, but I forgot.
They must have just rinsed him. Must have hit some big putts, you know?
James Honeyman took it as well. So taking out leg 13, Sam Barnett gets you a prize. And the 40-year-old who beat Ryan is, I'm assuming, Darren Stay Smith. So well done, players of the week.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. I do have one color commentary from the day. I talked to Aiden last night at doubles, and he said, he's like, I was on fire. I reckon I was 14 under. I'm like, that's good. But then I just saw, like, I didn't do the math that well in my head, but like, you only played 12 holes.
Yeah.
How were you 14? Yeah. How can you be 14 under? Come on, man. Like, even if you were perfect, you were 12.
Yeah.
You're telling me you didn't even get a par in that whole time? Anyway, good on you, Aiden. It's just, it just stuck. It was stuck in my mind from last night, and then I just saw it. Then I was like, yeah.
Nice.
Okay.
All right, we'll do a little bit of airing of grievances.
The airing of grievances. I got a lot of problems with you people. Now you're gonna hear about it.
I gotta fix that intro. I keep saying that, but. I actually got to do them.
I like it.
Yeah, but I just tried editing out some of the laughs. And just, anyway, I'll sort it out. I'll get it sorted. We've got a rebuttal. So last week, old Zach Schleff was a victim of the airing of grievances, and he sent us a rebuttal. So here we go.
Well, well, well. If it isn't Melbourne's fastest player with the slowest grievance... Big shout out to Joshua Quinn for his riveting roast of our pace of play last week. Truly elite banter, Josh. You must have spent minutes on that one. We didn't realise playing proper disc golf at a normal pace was such a crime. We'll try to cut out all the lining up shots and making putts next time. You know, the sort of speed that allows us to play actual disc golf instead of whatever half speed shot put Josh is out there doing. We'd like to run a quick poll for the listeners. What's more tedious, getting stuck behind our card or listening to a 7-part TED talk where a grown man gets genuinely rattled by waiting 90 seconds on a tee box? If you listened all the way through, please consult a medical professional because you may be in a coma. Anyway, Josh, next time you're stuck behind us, feel free to play through. Or better yet, bring a folding chair and enjoy the show. Until then, get stuffed, mate.
Enjoy the show, he says.
This is the best part of your show now.
It is. I really like it.
It's like a nerd version of Jerry Springer. I'm here for it.
It's good.
It's great.
It's good.
It's great.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. I feel like Zach put some effort into writing that, and like he really delivered it well too.
Delivered it very
well.
Yeah,
I reckon he probably practiced that a few times before he even called it in.
I hope so. We've got one more. It's from Ross Davies, and it's very ironic that Zach sent his in defending slow play. If you listen to Ross Davies,
okay, I'm here for it. Let's go.
G'day, the number one disc golf podcast in Australia, Throwlers. Long time listener and first time grievance deliverer, Ross here. As you might have heard, the Davies family popped over to Mount Gambier on the weekend to play what was an amazing tournament, Rumble in the Crater. Now, one of the best courses, run beautifully by the TD, with some of the best weather we've ever seen. What a great tournament it was. But passed across the dinner table tonight, I got a little grievance. And that grievance is about slow play. How does some of the best players in Australia hold up a bunch of kids the whole round? We're talking about players that shot 20 shots on average better than the kids behind them, but somehow stood them up on every single tee waiting. Now, Ryan, Bryce, Nathan, and the tee off personality, Paddy Robinson, if this is what you're teaching the kids to do to get better, just to play as slow as you like and take your time on every single shot, I think you're ruining disc golf. And P.S., that's not from me, guys. That's from someone else. I'm just passing it on. Have a good one.
There you go. So he aimed high and named names, which we love. We love.
Yeah. I'm more of a fan of personal attacks than like broad strokes, you know. Let's really get down to brass tacks if we can.
Exactly. that's good. A second week in a row, slow play.
Look, I'll field this one. Ross, if you don't like MPO players being slow, don't play tournaments because they are slow and they're not getting any faster anytime soon.
Nah.
You can razz them all you want. They're going to stay slow forever.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't actually know why that. I agree. I do agree. I've always wondered why they're slow. I know they're like methodical but they probably like have a better grasp of what to do at the right time than anyone else as well. And they still just take forever to decide what they're going to do.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't get it either. I'm trash. So I don't know, but I'm not any worse. Like I'm not any better slow. Like my trash isn't better slow. It's just as trash.
Fast. I'm with you. Yeah. That's how I feel about it too. Get on with it. Just get through it.
Yeah.
What will be, will be.
If anyone's got any grievances, just send them my way. We'll get them out there on the pub.
I've actually brought one. I brought one for you tonight as well.
Perfect.
Yeah, I just thought I'd get it out there. I've been sitting on it for a long time.
Excellent.
It's about your co-host.
Oh, yeah, even better.
Like I've been saving it. I've almost phoned it in a few times, but I've just decided against it. But now I've got this podcast. I can just really let myself go.
Oh yeah.
So my grievance is I send Chris lots of jokes about disc golf, and then he often uses them on your podcast as if he came up with them, and that to me is just not okay. Like you can say I heard a funny joke from this cool guy Daz, and then say the joke, and it'll still be funny. You can't just like you can't just claim it like it's yours. You know that's not really fair. So I'm sad about it, but I'm getting through it.
Excellent. I like that. Stealing jokes. No good, Chris.
No, mate. No, that ain't it.
All right. We got to talk some worlds before we wrap up here. So I know you watched most, if not all of it, right?
I watched more this year than any other year. Yes.
Yeah.
I've just the timing of it was good. Like it's, so it wasn't. Good. it wasn't USA time, it was Europe time, so it's a slightly different time zone malfunction to what America is. So yeah, I watched a lot. It was great.
Yeah, it was so good. I was happy to. I watched pretty much all of it, most all the FBO, most all the MPO. It was just lock me away for 3.5 hours or whatever it was, and then I'll say hi to the missus for 1.5 hours, and then I'm back in. that's what the weekend was. So
pretty much, yeah.
The FBO, we'll start there, was wild. So
it was more exciting than the men's to me this time.
Yeah,
like I know that's a big call. The men's, it's different, but there was the women's one was so awesome and like captivating, and there was like storylines, and it was like, yeah, man, it was so cool. It was great.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. But like Chris said, that he watched the Jomez stuff, and it does not come across that way, not live. Apparently, it just comes off as real trash. But live, it was so good.
I can feel that. Yeah.
But yeah, Henne got out of the gates, and there was a bunch of people with some solid negative scores coming through in the first round at the Beast. And then it sort of started to turn around a bit at the Monster. So Henne struggled on, started kicking in. A couple other names were switching around as well. And then Ida come good for round three. That's when she really started cementing her name. Like, she was already on lead card by then, but there's one thing to get onto lead card, and there's another thing to outperform everyone on lead card. So she got right up there, and then it come down into round four, and she was on fire. What's that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 down through the front nine, and everyone else was trash. Trash. Yeah. And then a whole bunch of pars in the row, and then what happened on hole 16?
It was like a slow motion train wreck. Just, and like she threw OB off, she threw OB to like a weird spot off the tee to start it. And that was like, that was like, oh, that's not good. That's not what you want to do. Like I had not seen anyone go OB right early off the tee until she did it. And then she cleaned it up. She went up the peninsula like to where she needed to be. And then she just threw four in a row, like into the OB, not making it over the hay bales. Or it's just like, oh man, slow death. And then she finally made it on, but the damage was done. It was a big one. Yeah.
We just thought that was it. Like, before that, it was over. She was up by so many. At 13 at one stage, it was 12 stroke lead by the time we got to this. And it was just I didn't consider for a second that she would take a 13 on this hole. Like, she was just going to go on to easily win Worlds with very little in her way. And then all of a sudden, it's just back on. Birdied hole 17, though. Like, I couldn't believe it. When she threw such a good shot on 17. Like, I would have thrown it as high as you possibly could and straight out of bounds. Like, the mental composure she had to birdie hole 17, which is really hard hole. Very, very impressive.
Yeah, 100%. She seems like she's, like, really got a good game, like, game face, head on her shoulders. Like, she can push the reset button and just get back into it. So she still, like, almost had the best round of the day with, like, out of anyone who was relevant, she had still, like, one of the top, like, probably top four out of the top 25 scores. She was still in it. Like, crazy. That's how good her round was up to that point.
Yeah.
It's actually insane. The round she was on before she did that, or like, if you just take away that one hole, like, she's had the hottest round an FPO player's ever had at Worlds. Like, but those eight strokes over par on that one kind of brought it back down to
brutal
to normal. So,
so we had a ring and ding ding ready set for the final day, and it was a super back and forth battle. Ella Hansen just charging from absolutely nowhere. So she finishes on neg 9, had a neg 12 round. Like, she wasn't a part of this. And then she forced her name into it. So maybe the best round ever by an FPO at Worlds. Well, I'm sure it was the best round ever by an FPO at Worlds. It was one of the highest rated ever by an FPO. So just incredible stuff. Takes a bogey on hole 18. So it could have been even spicier.
Yeah.
Probably didn't need a push, but she couldn't have known that going into it. But a par would have just had her there right at neg 10. So pretty wild stuff.
Yeah, I think she's just like, she's all gas, no brakes at that point. Like, she's, if you're birdieing like on repeat, you're not going to just like decide, I'll just par, go for par on the last. Like, you push. So I think she threw out of bounds on her second shot on the 18th. So that's how she got the bogey.
Yeah, it was tough.
But start to stick around, so.
And Hannah just with just late disaster situation. So hole 16 was rough, not a disaster. She takes a bogey. That happens on that hole. But that putt on 17 was disgusting. Like, I don't know what to say. Like, we were looking at a three-way tie going into hole 18, and she just missed the tappest of tap-ins.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Messed up.
Crazy, yeah. I mean, like, if you went through all of her rounds, she would have won Worlds by 10 if she could putt in C1.
Even a little bit.
Like, and not even putt well, like, putt reasonably well.
Yeah.
She was 25% in the final round in C1. Jesus. So that is 2 for 8.
That's so messed up.
She averaged, I'm just doing some quick math, she averaged like 56% C1 putting for the world championship.
It's crazy.
So and like, that means that she had 60 C1 putts and she missed 25 of them. So when you think of it that way, it's not great. So
She was still in the hunt on a come for hole 18, but she threw her second shot out of bounds, and that pretty much ended her chances. She was one stroke back. Ida was playing the hole essentially for par, I believe. Hannah ends up getting a par and not good enough, but On gets herself a birdie, and with 3 out of the last 4 holes birdied, and I think she missed the putt potentially on 17.
She went OB.
Yeah, sorry. She hit the putt. Yeah, she trickled out of bounds. So she was looking so good. Trickled out of bounds, but hits the putt. So 3 out of the last 4 birdies, forces the playoff. And we've got a 15-year-old girl versus a 45-year-old woman. And it was wild. On's round was out of control, though. So on the flip side, her putting, 7 out of 7 C1X and 6 out of 9 C2 putting. 6 out of 9. That's insane. She was just canning everything.
There were some big ones in there too, like proper like 17, 18 meter putts that she hit. So
yeah, so that was sick. I was here for it. Hole 18 is just riddled with shit in the way, and it was just about navigating it cleanly. And Ida was doing it, but end up just sort of throwing it out of bounds inexplicably. Right on the playoff holes.
Yeah. It was just like she just started off. Or it was such a shame. Like, I reckon you could put her in that spot. She put on the pin like 50 times in a row, but she missed the one she needed to. She missed the one that she had to get right, from 30 meters for the world championships. And yeah, started off OB and like over. It was like over a bad spot of the OB that she had to play from quite deep as well. Like, it wasn't like she's edge of circle now. It's like, no, she's still like 20 away.
Yeah.
I don't fully understand the layup there, I think, but I've sort of seen like a little bit of news about it. She seemed to know what she was doing. Like, that was the play.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't get it. Personally, like, I wouldn't own Scoggins is like the best putter, best FPO putter in the world. I'm not gonna hedge my bets. She won't hit a putt from five.
No.
But yeah, that I think that was what she decided to do rather than erring and she just probably didn't think she could hit it. And that was, so she said, might as well put out the pin and hope Owen doesn't hit. And then she did. And that was it. So
Yeah. Yeah. I'm awesome with you player, though. I just would have blasted at it, missed it, and then lost that way. I think that's,
yeah, you don't want to put, like at that point they're playing match play. You don't want to put your life in someone else's hands in match play ever. You want to like live by the sword, die by the sword, but you're by your own merit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Cause yeah, you got to expect everyone to make everything all the time, in my opinion. So.
Yep. But epic finish, and On takes it down and quite emotional afterwards. In a speech, she just said, I never thought I'd ever win Worlds. She's like, I just don't throw far enough. And I just never thought I could win a tournament like this. Like, I was never going to win Worlds. And she did. So she won five in a row FP40 Worlds, and then now has an FPO Worlds to go with it. So hasn't even had a good year. Hasn't won a tournament this year and hasn't really popped off at many of them. But when it counted, the best putter in the world was making the putts and no one else was. And that's all it took.
Yeah, fair call. Yep.
So real exciting there for On. That was really cool to see.
So good. I mean, and I think it's the first ever Masters World Champion and FPO World Champion at the same time.
Yeah,
surely.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah, I definitely saw that.
Like,
so.
And that'll probably never, like, that could not ever happen in the men's division, and it probably will never happen, like, unless she goes back-to-back.
Yeah.
She's the only one who's really capable of that ever happening again, too, in our generation, so... yeah, cool. So cool, man. And she, like, when those two are playing off, I was just watching it going like, I'm not mad at either of these two winning this.
Yeah,
like, it's
for
cool.
Sure.
And like Owen had the like an absolute heater final round to like get herself there and be in the playoff. And then like Ida like looked the best the whole way through the week and just was unlucky not to win. Like, yeah, it's crazy. It's I'm looking forward to watching her in the future. Like she's the package, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. There was her and another Ida Emily Ness were both messing around with some top tens and stuff in the tournaments leading into it. The other Ida finished in 11th place. I'm pretty sure they battled out. I think they might have been first and second in the European juniors tournament.
Juniors, yeah,
just
correct.
Before too, so they're both coming hard. The other Ina has been playing a little bit better. So it was really cool to see that this one pumped off. And yeah, she just looked good. She could putt, she could throw. Yeah, she's got a lot of ground to do. So it'll be really cool to see in the future for sure.
And like she's played the event like 50 ratings points over her rating.
Yeah.
Which is like so sick.
Yeah.
Imagine like any of us doing that at an event, we just feel like the biggest dog of all time.
Yeah.
She's done it like on the world stage at world champs and nearly won. Like, so sick.
Yeah. This is like Chris Ronald's going and playing nationals and then just shooting 1,000 rated event and coming second, but on steroids.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Nah, sick. The big notable as well from this was, Silva really dropping off in the later rounds, but, Kristen Latt having to pull out for just lots of anxiety is how she put it after a round one, holding off tears and just talking about how she doesn't even know how she's going to get really through the night and sleep. So
you never want to hear that from anyone, really. Like everyone's got their own stuff going on, but yeah, she was. Did not seem like in a good headspace on the course the first day either. And then it just disappeared quickly from there. Just sort of dropped off the cliff a bit. She's like, what was I reading? She's like, I read that she's like registered her name as like copywriting her own name and stuff. So she's going through a bunch of like, cause she's like a big deal in
in Estonia, and like basically what that means is like people can't use her likeness or her name without her permission, essentially. So yeah, like she's going through all the legalities of like having like trademarking her own name essentially right in Estonia right now. So she probably just got like lawyers and stuff and all this sort of thing all happening around this, and then she's also trying to train and get ready, and yeah, so it's a lot.
It's a bit going on.
That's a lot. Yeah. A little bit going on.
Over in the MPO side, it was a quite tight battle as well. Not as much of the drama with the big swings as the FEO, but some very good disc golf. A lot of people started out hot. Sullivan Tipton was the best amongst them, but yeah, a lot of the familiar names flown around there as well. Sully kept holding on, but after a negative 14 round at the Monster, which some are saying is the best round of disc golf that anyone's ever played. I think it's,
yeah,
it was 5 strokes better than the previous course record, 4 strokes better than anyone shot on the day, and then just outrageous. So Ezra Aderholt gets himself right to the, took a 4-stroke lead after that. That's how good that fucking round was.
Unbelievable.
Didn't get the 1100 rating though, which is apparently pretty stiff, but I don't think they're going to care. People are going to look back on that and just go, the fuck he do that?
Yeah. Absolutely. Just because it's at Worlds, like, and it's just like, yeah, he birdied the last 8 holes in a row on the day.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Wild.
Couldn't quite do as much the next day. 10 strokes worse, but still ended up holding out the lead by 1 point. And then in round 4, dropped off a bit too, but still in the hunt. So Gannon Burr ends up with a negative 10 and gets a 2-stroke lead going into the final round. A negative 15 on the Beast by Anthony Barella gets him all the way up into second place, kind of out of nowhere. So moving day, he was the big mover.
That round was like, I watched it because I didn't get to watch it live, and I watched it the next day, and I was just like, what the hell, man? He just, like, he was hitting, he went birdie or better for 13 holes in a row.
It's incredible.
And on the hardest course, one of the hardest courses in the world, 13 holes in a row, birdie or better.
He's just a freak.
Yeah. After parring the first, he went 13 straight birdies with an eagle thrown in just for fun as well.
And then a few names still floating around, still in contention, but Gannon Burr, the number one player in the world with a 2-stroke lead on a course that he's never shot worse than neg 10 at, was going to be hard to beat. He ends up shooting a neg 9 with a bogey on hole 17, but no one else could catch him. What's his name? Barella, just way off the mark from his day before. Well, not even way off the mark, but dropped off towards the end. Almost had another disaster on hole 16, which really put him out of it. Ezra Aderholt couldn't fire. It was between Gannon, Nicholas Antala, and Aaron Gossage, who had himself one hell of a Worlds. They both went, neg 12 for Antala, neg 13 for Gossage. But they were just too far back. The damage was done, and Burr takes it out by 1 stroke. So the number one player in the world is the world champion for the first time in a while, from what I've heard.
Yeah, since Paul McBeth, I think, was the last one to do it. So that was not Paul McBeth that beat Aaron Gossage a few years ago either. That was the one before it when they, yeah, so ages, it's been ages. Gannon is unbelievable at disc golf. I know we have to know that there's going to be a Gannon Burr era. Like he's going to win a few majors a year, a couple majors a year for the next 10 years. Like, yeah. the guy's 20 years. He's 20 years old. Like, it's he's crazy. A baby. And he's like a freaky long-armed Michael Phelps baby who can like throw 450 hyzers forehand and backhand and pop from 20 meters. He's a scary dude. And like, to put in perspective, like the craziest part is like the field here at this Worlds, like everyone around him played better than like the average is sky high. Like the standard is higher than it's ever been, and still he rises to the top. Like shit is wild. He's so good at this golf.
Yeah. You look at Anthony Barella's round, you look at Ezra Aderholt's round, and unless you're also shooting massive ones everywhere else, like that gets you fourth and fifth. That's not enough.
Yeah.
Like you just got to be so consistent for so long. Five rounds is, there's a lot of time. Negative 43 over five rounds at some couple of really hard courses is pretty fucked up. So,
yeah. I mean, and he said like he kind of took, Isaac Robinson approach to this one. Like he was like, I don't feel like I'm throwing it that good. So just keep going, just chip away, do the best I can each round. It's just like, yeah, I mean, he still averaged like 10.60 for the event. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Chipping away. He's not throwing it that well. He's not throwing it that well, but yeah. You know, 10.60 average. So the man is not human.
What are your thoughts on the Tampa Ray course and specifically the greens? So some pretty hectic man-made greens. Hole 8, I think, might have been that weird giant mound. And then hole 18, obviously the submarine hole. What do you think about Tampa Ray?
I like it. It's a little like... Both of the courses had a few little pieces that I'm like, I can see how, as a professional disc golfer, they would feel a little gimmicky, like just those greens. Yeah. And then maybe the hole 16, like just the do or die of hole 16 for on the monster. Like it's, but I mean, these are the best frisbee throwers in the world. They should be able to just deal with it, like, and just get it done. But like, yeah, hole 6 at Tampere, like there was some train wrecks on that hole.
Yeah.
Like people trying to run putts that then end up OB on the far side. And then they try to lay up and it rolls back down. And it's like big numbers. I think Kat Merch had a massive one in the first or maybe second round. Like she's like lead card and then takes an 8 and then she's just like, see you later guys. I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean like you can take a 3. Like I think the commentators got it right. They're like, don't play for birdie if you're 10 meters from the pin. Like just take the 3 and walk away from it, because the birdie becomes an 8 if you're not careful. So
I like
the mounds. I think they're cool, but like I can see how maybe some of these guys would not like it.
I don't like it. I feel like if someone's just watching this sport and not really in it, they'd be like, what the fuck? What the fuck is that? Like, I don't know.
What's the mound? What's that mound for?
Yeah. I just don't like that if you're just a little bit off, you're absolutely cooked. And I get it. You don't have to play it that way. But, I don't know. I don't like if someone's 10 meters away that they're forced to throw an 8-meter shot. I don't know. That's off of mine. I didn't like that. But, yeah, lots of people do. So I was curious on your thoughts. And we got Chris's thoughts on hole 16. At the Beast, he likes it. I was kind of indifferent to it. Now I think I'm just against it. What are your thoughts?
I'm still pretty indifferent. I'm not that fussed by it. It definitely like destroyed a few people's weekends. Missy Gannon comes to mind. She took a 14 on it the first day.
Mm-hmm.
The first round there.
Yeah, I think
Ida wouldn't mind having it back, as well. But. Yeah,
for sure. I don't know. I've said this before, if you're having to change the rules to sort your course design, then I just don't think you got that good of a course design. So, because it's not standard OB rules. Like, if they kept it at standard OB rules, I think I'd be fine with it. Because then if you're missing short, like Ida was doing, then you're throwing a bad shot. So it would just change it that people would do more ace run stuff, and they'd probably do a lot of out of bounds long. So it'd be the ones that get the birdie or the eagle would be the purple that got the right weight. And then the ones would get pars and bogeys or whatever, the people that played the safe shot and went a little too far. And I'm fine with that. Like, if you want to have a green that is fucking tiny, then one of the repercussions for that is that people get tap-in pars or bogeys or whatever it is. That's how I like
it. I'm with you.
But, I'm with you on that. But people love the drama. But I think of, let's say, Eruption Hole 18. How would the MPO field respond if they had the same rules on that hole, where your disc had to come to rest on that island?
Yeah.
Like, they fucking hate it.
Like, yeah, they'd hate it.
You can't buzz it. You can't go over it. You need to rest on it. So short's no good. Yeah. Long's no good. I know. And I know that's a hard shot and not, you know, you don't necessarily have, it's not that hard of a shot once you've gone out of bounds the first time at the other course. But I just kind of think it's that same sort of concept. I just don't love it.
Yeah, agreed. And I think, like, just the way that fairway is designed, like, you can't move. Like, once you blow it, you get to, like, keep blowing it from the same spot.
Yeah.
Like, there's no advancing. You're not going to, like, no one's going to throw sideways to get to, like, 40. They're just going to keep trying from 60.
Yeah.
And, like, that, yeah, and that's where people were getting undone. But I'm with you. Like, I don't love the design. I don't. Yeah, I think the way you described it would be better, but it wouldn't create the swings like this did this weekend. So.
The drama's definitely there, but I don't know. I felt gross watching Eater do it, so I was like, no.
Yeah.
I didn't feel as gross when I watched AB do it. I thought that was pretty funny, but when I watched Eater do it, I was like, no, not this poor little girl.
Yeah, that's true.
That kind of really swung the door on it for me. So. Hole 17, I think, is the opposite. I think hole 17 is such a brilliant disc golf hole. It's just slightly downhill. Agreed. The basket's not even on a fucked up slope, but it's just, if you throw a forehand with too much angle, you will probably roll out of bounds. And if you throw a backhand that doesn't have a little bit of turn, or it's too high, you will probably be out of bounds. It's so good. It's just so simple. It's just there. And I want to throw from the FPO tee a buzz at it and just see what happens. Like, I want to throw that hole so bad. And I think that's really cool. I just think that's such a good, simple, brilliant disc golf hole. So I love 17. Always love watching that one.
I'm with you. I never saw a lefty play. What do you think I would have to do?
You just have to hope it doesn't roll, I guess. You throw the hyzer and hope it spikes and sits. Try to put it in the basket, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. Or I'm throwing like almost like a turning backhand that like matches the slope and stops at the grass.
That
like
would be very impressive.
It would be very hard. Either way would be hard, I think, to get a lefty to stick.
Yeah. So. I have to ask Anakin, see what she does.
Oh, I'd love to ask her.
And the final thing from Worlds that I thought was cool was the crowd. The crowd was just fucking enormous. Like, they were everywhere. And last section, 16, 17, 18, there were just so many people there. That was so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved how they got behind, like, Ida and the other Finnish players too. It was sick. Like, it, what's his name? Lefty bloody.
Yeah.
Lefty Lenny. So he finished like 13th or 14th, I think. But he threw in on 16 for the eagle, for the eagle two. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, that was dope.
Yeah, so sick.
And how was Barella's hole 18, where he just decided to go for the pin? That was so messed up.
I'm here for it, man.
That was so good.
I'm here for it.
Imagine he does that and just puts it in for two. He's like, maybe I'm in this thing.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, that was cool. All right. You got anything more for Worlds?
Nah, I'm good, man. Nah, thanks.
Nice. All right, we'll do a little bit of spotlight, not light, to finish real quick. Long pod, but it was always going to be long. We had a bit going on and we had Worlds, so... do you have any spotlights or not lights? I know you did your grievance already.
No, I'm good. I didn't bring one. I should have prepared, but
No, that's fine. I've got a few.
All yours, buddy.
I went through the Kalen Eagle and the Marky one. So I had a few different things here. One of them, an honorable mention, goes to the boys from Queensland, I think it is. Two off the first. They do a pod. They must have reached out to the PDGA and just asked if they could do a companion stream with the live for, I think, two of the rounds. And So they had a free live stream going for anyone who wanted to watch it. You could just watch without a subscription. And they had their little talking heads up there doing a little, you know, just a companion to it, just talking about the shots and what's going on. So I only flicked on for a little bit just to see what it was about, but I just thought that was awesome. It was really cool that they reached out, really cool that the PDGA was like, sure. And yeah, that was dope. Definitely like round two or three or something, and then maybe even the final round. I can't remember. But yeah, pretty dope. So anyone who got to watch it because of that is, that's sick.
That's cool ass.
One of the other things, I guess I haven't watched much of Gannon, or just maybe I never noticed it, but every time he throws a good shot or hits a good putt, his caddy goes, "Let's go, G."
Yeah, that gets a bit tiring.
I loved it. Maybe it's because I had him in my tippy.
He throws so many good shots.
That's true.
He throws so many good shots, though, that it's like, shut up.
Well, I had him in my tipping comp, and I had Kristen, and she DNF, so I needed Gannon to win twice somehow. And so every time he threw a good shot, I started doing it too. I was like, let's go, G. So I had that in my spotlights. But my main spotlight, and I had this written down after like day two, but my spotlight goes to On, and not for winning, just for being an absolute jet of a card mate. Like, she just looked like she was having heaps of fun out there, especially her dynamic with Ida. Ida's really out of her depths here, a child, and not used to any of this stuff, and then throwing a sick shot, and it just would be, especially if the others are playing crap, like, it would be so weird to understand how you should react in that situation. Like, should I be happy with this? Should I whatever? And On was all the time just, like, high fives, fist bumps, like, giving her cuddles, smiling, laughing, and I feel like she just created a really great environment for everyone, but especially, I think, for Ida, so... I had her down as a spotlight well before, you know, a couple of rounds before she ended up getting it done. So she gets my spotlight for just being a jet.
Yeah, I think she's like well known as being like a cheerleader for everyone on tour as well. So she's definitely like a favorite amongst the other women and men for that matter. Like she gets behind people and she supports everyone really well through the year. So
love that.
For her to win on top of that. And being who she is so sick.
My honorable mention, not light, is on the commentary. So Natos and Terry shouldn't be able to commentate together. That's the worst duo. I really don't like it. I find it just annoying as and quite boring. But I'm annoyed they didn't put... I don't know who the guy is, but there's one guy who did all the European stuff. Like, I know there was a couple dudes who did it, but... The one guy that did it at the festival as well, I just really like him. He's got a good mix of like excitement and professionalism. I thought it was a miss not having him in there. He did it, I think, for FBO and MPO at the European Festival, and he's good. I was disappointed not to see him do the commentary. So a bit of a double whammy having both those guys together, but and not having the Euro guy. But the actual not light has to go to the FBO putting. Like, Hannah and Evelina lead the way, but it wasn't just them. I mean, there was some just terrible putting from all of them. There was so many tap-ins missed, just like across the board that you were watching. Like, Ida was pretty good, and On was good, and what's her name? Silva was really good when she was out there. So I'm not saying there's not good putting. There is, but there was so much bad putting. It was tough. It was tough to watch a lot of the time. And these girls are so good. Like, I'm watching them throw shots, and I'm like, you are so much better than me. And then I'm watching them putt, and I'm like, how? like my bad putting days are still a lot better than some of the stuff that these girls are putting out there. And I just, it just makes no sense because they're so much better than me. So they just need to get their shit together. Like, I don't know what else to say about it, but you can't just be missing tap-ins. One of the quotes that either Juliana or can't remember the other commentator said, that it was something to do with Henna or Evelina, but she goes, that's what's holding her back, these just outside of bullseye putts. That can't be what's holding you back. You, nah, 4 meter putts cannot be, that can't be the difference between you and being the best in the world at something.
Yeah, agreed.
I don't know. Like, Evelina missed the 4 meter putt by 4 meters one time. I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You missed more than that, even. Like, yeah, it's not good. Evelina's missed, let's just do some quick maths, like 30 C1X putts this weekend.
It's crazy, man. It's so messed up.
She actually has more than Henna, so she's done. She gets the, she peaks. She's done the best job of doing bad.
But I mean, it was just like everyone that was on lead card or chase card that I was watching, like they had some bad ones, some real, real bad ones. And I just don't, like, you don't see that on the NPO side. And I don't know. There's nothing innately, like no one should be missing the 4 meter putts at the rate that they're missing. So I just, yeah, that gets my not light. It was hard to watch. And yeah, that disappointed me.
All right, you ready?
Yes.
47 missed C1X putts over the weekend.
What?
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
I thought Henna's was a lot. Henna's was like 27.
It's almost 10 a day.
And it literally was almost 10 a day.
And she missed inside the bullseye putts as well.
Missed 8 the first day, 6 the second day, 5 the third day, 10 the fourth day, and 8 the last day.
It's gross.
Yeah, yikes.
Yikes indeed. all right. Well, I think that's all I got. Is that all you got?
That's it.
No worries. Well, I really appreciate you jumping in here, filling Chris's shoes. Sorry, everyone, that the pod was so long, but you just got more of Darren, so that was nice. All right.
Sorry.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks.